Do you need your weekly comedy fix? Relax while we visit the sitcoms you love, the jokes you remember, the characters you will never forget, and the stars that bring them to you. Sit back. It's The Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to The Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss. That's me. And this time out, so glad that you're joining us because we have a returning guest, one of our first, I believe, actually, but certainly somebody who people have been asking to have back on the show for just so long. And we are going to bombard her with questions from all you guys. Everything that you sent into us ever since we announced that this episode was coming, we're going to hit her with the hardest, toughest, and kind of the craziest questions that we could find, all about her life, her times, her career, Full House, Fuller House, everything in between. She's back with us. She is Andrea Barber. Andrea, welcome back to The Laugh Track.
Hello. Thank you for having me back. This is exciting. I'm excited to hear these questions. I'm a little nervous, too.
It's crazy. Well, last time we talked, I think we were kind of heading toward the end of Fuller House. So you were sort of still in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Now we've got some time behind us, and now there's this legacy, you could almost say, for both Full House and Fuller House. And so a little bit of a different perspective now from you. So
it's true. It feels like it's been 10 years since I talked to you last, not only because of the pandemic of the last year, but yeah, I'm just in a completely different place now. Since the show, the series finale aired just about a year ago, almost to the day. I think it was June 2nd last year. So, yeah, that's like crazy to me that I'm so far removed from it now. So maybe I have a little better perspective, or I don't know. Maybe I'm just rusty. We'll see what comes out of my mouth today. It could be fabulous or very awful. We'll see.
It's Kimmy Gibbler unfiltered, ladies and gentlemen. We're going full tilt here. You know what? Let's get right into it because like I warned you, these questions are all over the map. No rhyme or reason. And that's what's going to make this fun. So
great.
And we're going to try to call out everyone we can. Of course, we got these questions from Twitter. We got them from Facebook, from a lot of different Full and Fuller House groups that celebrate and talk about the shows on Facebook and through social media. So everyone just so excited to interact with you and excited to hear this episode as well. We'll start with Brittany Goodale. Do her kids, speaking of you, of course, enjoy watching her shows? Are they embarrassed or do they love the fact that their mom is known for making America laugh the way that she has?
I have so many different answers for this question, and it all depends on their age, their mood, and whether or not we're fighting or not. So let's see. Okay, in the middle school year. So I have my youngest daughter, Felicity. She's in middle school now. And then I have Tate, who's 17. He's a high schooler. He's finishing up his junior year in high school. So I've noticed that the middle school years, kids are super embarrassed. Like my daughter and my son went through this too in middle school, like just thinks this is the worst thing ever. Like she's just like rolling her eyes and she's super embarrassed when I get recognized when we go out. I remember picking up my kids from school when my son was in middle school and go into the local Starbucks and there's like middle schoolers in there getting their Frappuccinos or whatever. And they would be like whispering, "Oh, Kimmy Gibbler." And my son was just like mortified. And he was like, "We have to go, like, forget the drinks. We have to go right now." And so, okay. So middle school, I'm definitely not cool. Then once my son got to high school and he joined the basketball team, suddenly like the basketball team was like, "Whoa, your mom's Kimmy Gibbler. That's so cool." Hmm. Now he thinks this is the greatest thing ever because it gives him some street cred.
Right.
You know, he's kind of like, "Yeah, of course, you know, of course my mom is on the show. Oh, yeah, I'm great friends with the kids on the show." You know, he gets some clout now from being my kid. So I look forward to when my daughter reaches that age and I'm cool again in her
eyes. It feels very circle of life. You just have to kind of wait for the cycle to play.
It's so true. And then, but the one thing we can all agree on is that when my kids come to the studio with me, like they are all in, like they think it's great. They love everyone that they meet. They are still friends with the kids from Fuller House. Mm. They're friends with the ADs. They're friends with the PAs. Like, they're friends with everybody on the set, and they think it's so cool. They're like, Mom, you know, you got to get on another show because we want to go again. We want to, like, be friends with the cast. And, you know, they don't care about, like, that this is my career or how I make a living. They just want to, you know, schmooze with the people on the set.
It's a lifestyle.
It's crazy. But yeah, so that's how it is with kids. You know, it ebbs and flows, and it all depends on the season of life.
I hear you. I absolutely hear you. So Leia Nechama Chadoff, and I apologize to everybody whose names I'm going to mangle during this episode. How long did it take to film her scenes in both shows? And I think what we're kind of getting at here in my mind is, did the process change a lot from Full House to Fuller House? Because both of them involved studio audiences, but, you know, it's a lot of years in between. Just did the production style change? Did any of that procedure kind of make it longer or more efficient to create these shows?
Oh, that's a great question. Production wise, it's very similar to the 80s, how we shot sitcoms in the 80s. I mean, the cameras are more high tech, and you know, you only need one person to move the camera instead of three people to move the beast that was the camera. But the process is still very similar. And I don't think a lot of people know just how long it does take to shoot a 30-minute sitcom. And it usually takes a full week. It takes 5 days. We somehow managed to shorten it down to 4 days. I still don't know why. I feel like with a show like Full House and Fuller House, when you have babies and dogs and like crazy stunts, you really need that extra day. But they wanted to do it in 4 days, but usually it's 5 days. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are rehearsal days. No cameras, no makeup. You're just kind of working out the blocking with the director, which is where you stand and when you cross and when you walk out of a scene and when you walk into a scene. It's a lot of rehearsal and also fine tuning the script. Like, we will do run-throughs, which is like we just put the show on its feet and we run it for the producers or Netflix or Warner Brothers, whoever's coming by the studio that day. We do run-throughs so that they can see it and they can say, oh, you know what? This storyline isn't working. We need to tweak the script a little bit. So it's a lot of rewriting until you get to Thursday. And that's when they bring out the cameras and the hair and the makeup and the costumes. And then we shoot on Thursday and Friday. And Friday night is when the audience comes in. They would load in an audience of like 200 people. And at 5:30, was it 5:30 or 5? Anyways, around 5 o'clock, we would do a live performance, which is great because you get the energy and the excitement of a live performance, like a play, but you're also allowed to mess up because, you know, if you mess up, they just say, okay, take two, and you can do it all over again. So it's a little bit less pressure than doing like a live play.
Gotcha. Cool.
So yeah, that's how long. So yeah, how long would it take to film my scenes? I don't know, but the whole thing takes about a week. And each scene kind of depends on if there's babies, kids, and dogs, or how many actors are in the scene. If it's just a scene between two people, it's usually like two takes and a pickup. So maybe three takes total. If it involves a lot of cast members or animals or babies, it takes a very long time with a lot. You know, you'll do an 8, 9, 10 takes with some pickups, which means different angles, or, you know, we need to get this line clean because we couldn't understand it. Right. You know, it's a lot of stuff like that. Yeah. So.
Long day at the office, long week at the office.
Definitely, definitely some long days in there, but always worth it. Always fun.
Okay. So you're going to remember the specific scene. I didn't get a chance to go back and check it out ahead of time, but Candace Haynes wants to know, was it hard to do cartwheels while being fake pregnant? So I guess there is a point where, which totally, absolutely checks.
No, I do remember that. I can't tell you exactly which episode it is, but I remember the scene that she's talking about. And it was super easy for me because it was a stunt double. Like, they asked me, they're like, do you know how to do a cartwheel? And I'm like, well, not gracefully. Like, I'm 40 something years old. I'm not very flexible. I could do a bad cartwheel. Like, if you want a comedic cartwheel where I can be funny and clumsy, you know, I could definitely do that. But they're like, no, we want you to look like an expert cartwheeler. I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. So they brought in a stunt double that's my similar height and size, and they put the fake belly on her in the same costume, and she just cartwheeled on out of that scene, and people thought it was me. So great.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Andrea Zuniga. Was it hard? Well, you already talked about this a little bit. Was it hard filming with little kids? I think we talked about that last time you were on the show as well, but it's kind of a whole separate beast of extra filming, I guess, extra taping, just trying to get those specific scenes in, right?
Definitely. Yeah, I do remember our conversation about this last time. And again, it all depends on the kid and the age of the kid and the the hardest thing about working with kids are the child labor laws and the constraints, which are there for a reason. I mean, it's very necessary to have these laws that kids can only work so many hours on certain days and certain times of the day, and they need so many breaks, which is understandable. But if you have a difficult scene and it's not working, you can't get the right shot, or people are forgetting their lines, it's like, okay, we're losing the babies in 2 minutes. We got to get this scene done. So yeah, it can be challenging. And then when they reach the toddler ages, they just want to do whatever they want. Like they don't want to sit still. And it also depends. Like the Olsen twins were pretty good. Like they were pretty good about mimicking or doing what they were told. The little boys that played Tommy were just full on boys. Like, and they were great, but they're just like, we just want to run. Like, we just want to run around, the camera aisle, and we don't want to stand in one spot. Like, why would they do that? They're like 2-year-olds. So of course they wouldn't want to stand still. And then it all depends on the writing too. Like, you have to know your child actors and their capabilities, so you can't write them like really dramatic scenes if they're not like really talented actors. I don't mean that in a bad way, but like you can't write a whole lot of emotion in there when you have kids who don't really understand that emotion or don't have that kind of range. Because for a lot of like little kids, like toddlers I'm talking about, they just mimic whatever they're told. Like the dialogue coach will be standing off stage and say, okay, say, hi Santa, or whatever the line is, and they just repeat it. So you can only give them so many lines and stuff. Once they reach about 5 and they can start actually reading the scripts themselves, like when you think about it, it's kind of crazy to ask kids to act before they can even read. Like, you need to know how to read in order to know how to act.
It's so true.
Once they reach age 5 or 6, then they start being able to read their own scripts. It gets a little bit easier. When you think about it, Hollywood is such a bizarre environment for child actors. We ask them to do things that, you don't ask toddlers in preschool, okay, sit and hit your mark and stay there and don't move. And, that's not a thing in preschool. So we have a lot of requirements for child actors that there's, it's unheard of outside of the business. So
I was going to say, when they hit 5 years old, that's when they start to be easier to work with. But that's probably also when they start interacting directly with their agents. So maybe a bit tougher behind the scenes.
But very true. Very true. It's
Hollywood.
A cutthroat business out there.
Let's see here. Jordan Kelsey Stanley wants to know, what was Andrea's favorite Kimmy line in the reboot in Fuller House?
Oh man, that's a hard question. My favorite line in the reboot. Okay. Well, the one that like just jumps out at me immediately is from the final season. I want to say it's the second to last episode when the, Kimmy DJ and Stephanie are in the attic looking for something, bridal gear, wedding veils or something. And we find Michelle's bike. And I say something like, well, if she hasn't come back for her bike by now, she's not coming. Yeah. And when I first did the line, like in the run through, I'm like, I'm just going to look at the camera. I mean, there was no camera, but I'm going to look out to the audience and just play it like breaking the fourth wall and just be like, listen, this has been the running gag for 5 seasons that we've tried to get the Olsen twins and they're not coming back. They are not coming back. All the reporters that ask us for 5 years is, are the Olsen twins coming back? Are like, everybody's tired of it. Mostly the Olsen twins. Like, everybody's tired of this question. And so it's finally, I'm just like, yeah, they're not coming back. So I'm so glad I did it in front of the camera several ways. I did it to the camera and then I did it to Stephanie. So they had options in the editing room and they chose the one where I broke the fourth wall. And I'm so happy because that's the one I was hoping they would choose.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let's see. Did she, this is from Melissa Stevens. Did she enjoy filming Full House more, or Fuller House? And what she's basically asking is, did you enjoy the experience of being a part of, just being a part of those shows more when you were younger or more so later on when you were an adult?
Oh, I enjoyed Fuller House as an adult much more, mostly just because I have up the perspective of an adult of how rare it is to have a show on the air that long, how rare it is for a cast to remain that close for that long. And just to have gratitude for that experience and getting to do it not once but twice. Also, I didn't have to go to school the second time around on the original show. I had to do, you know, my mandatory schooling every day, which was fine. I loved school, but it, you know, it is a full time job, and I was in school full time too. So that it's a juggle for child actors to have to get good grades, because if you don't get good grades, you can't be a child actor anymore. You got to maintain your grades, right, and you have to know your lines when you show up to set. So it's a it's definitely a juggle. So I would say for all of those reasons, Fuller House was my favorite.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. Gory Corey has two questions. He wants to know, how did the Kimmy character evolve from a fairly normal best friend to the crazy woman we would know her as today? Because even in the original Full House, you didn't really start out quite as fleshed out in that direction of just being as wacky as you would become. It seemed like it happened over time.
That's a good observation, because I feel the same way when I go back and watch the first couple of seasons of Full House. Yeah, I mean, I was just like this kid with curls and my overalls, and I was just sort of like the best friend. I don't think they had a direction for the character. I mean, I was only supposed to be on like one episode, maybe two. Like I was never supposed to be a regular character. It just ended up being that way. So maybe it was right around the time I became more of a regular character in seasons 3, 4, 5. I don't even know when that happened. I can't remember. And I don't know how, I have no idea how it happened. Like I wasn't in the writer's room and I was a kid, so I wasn't really privy to those conversations of why they turned the character into this like loud, zany, quirky character that barged in the back door, and the grown-ups were always like, oh, you know, groaning, Kimmy Gibbler. And they were so mean to her. Back then, the guys were so mean to Kimmy Gibbler, which I'm just like, that wouldn't fly today. Like, you could not make episodes like that today. And I would never speak to my daughter's friends that way. Even if they were like Kimmy Gibbler, I would never speak to them that way. But anyways, this was the 80s and 90s, so you got away with a lot more. So I don't know how she evolved into this crazy person. And the writer who created the character, Lenny Ripps, he's no longer with us. You know, he passed away many, many, many years ago. So I have no idea. I don't even have anyone to ask. I don't know. I guess I could ask Jeff Franklin, but it just sort of evolved organically, I guess you could say.
Did you feel like there was a little bit of what Kimmy would become in you? I mean, do you think it was something where people just got to know you, the writers got to know you and saw something they can kind of pull out and amplify a little bit?
No, I was nothing like Kimmy Gibbler. I was so shy and quiet. I've never been like Kimmy Gibbler, but especially when I was younger, I was very insecure and very quiet. I would say that's normally that's how writers write, is they get to know the actor, they get to know your strengths and your weaknesses, and then they write to your strengths and they kind of pull out aspects of your personality and write it into the character. That's normally how it works. I don't think that happened with me. I don't think so, because I was just so different and I was so shy and I never talked much. Like even in the cast, when the cast would go out for our dinners on Friday nights and stuff, I was just kind of quiet. Like I loved belonging and being part of the group, but I was always the quietest one. So I have no idea where this character came from. Maybe they saw something in me and they're like, yeah, let's make her funny and give her a lot of physical comedy to do. And that ended up being one of my strengths.
Obviously it all worked out. The choice, it was a good direction.
Yeah.
So let's see. One more from Gory Corey.
Oh, yeah,
was it intimidating to grow as a side character in Full House, but then return as essentially one of the main leads in Fuller House, because even from where you left off in Full House, that was kind of a jump, right? As far as the focus on Kimmy Gibbler.
Definitely. No, it was a big jump to go from the sidekick to one of the three leads. And I would say it was definitely more intimidating to, especially that first season of Fuller House, when it, like, there was a lot of press and there was a lot of like buildup to this season. You know, everyone's like, oh my gosh, we want to see what do they look like now? And what are their, where are their characters now? I just feel like there was a lot of hype surrounding that first season.
Yeah.
So I did feel a lot of pressure, not as a lead, because I mean, I'm sharing that spotlight with Candace Cameron Bure and Jodie Sweetin. And they're like, they're such pros, and they're so, and so they were just sort of dragging me along. Like they're so good. They're such good spokesmen for the show. They're such talented actresses. And so I was just kind of like, well, I'm just going to ride their coattails. And just as long as I'm funny and I can be funny, then I'm doing my job. But where I did feel pressure was just in all like the media and the, it was like, that wasn't a thing back in the, for any of the kids. We didn't have red carpets in the 80s, and we didn't have social media in the 90s. And we didn't, like, I don't know if it was a thing, but I certainly wasn't doing live appearances on the Today Show to promote Full House. So that was terrifying. Like all of the media, the red carpets, the promotion was absolutely mind-boggling and terrifying. And I was, here I am coming out of my coma. You know, I left the business for 20 years. So here I am like emerging, and I'm like, oh, what do you mean? Like, I got to put on heels and I have to talk and I have to like be able to sound eloquent and not, and like calm my nerves enough to not look like I'm so nervous.
Yeah.
It was absolutely terrifying. So the acting part is the easiest part. I'm telling you, it's the acting is the most fun and it's the easiest part. Everything else is the hard part about this business.
Well, it's interesting because if you think about it, if you're joining a high profile show, that's a broadcast show, you know, an episode a week, you're filming throughout a series of months, you're getting feedback. Even if social media exists now, you're getting feedback, and now you've got time to maybe make adjustments, or the creative has time to make adjustments. Yeah. Here, you're doing it all blind. You're putting it out there. It comes out at 3 a.m. or whatever, and by 8 a.m., Twitter is just filled with, you know, what people are going to think, good, bad, or indifferent. So, yeah. I mean, did that impact you, just the idea of, boom, here it all is, and we'll see how the world reacts?
Yeah, I don't. Like, now that I'm a little further removed from it and I'm not like actively working for Netflix, I don't love the binging. Like, that was such a selling point to Netflix, is that this, you can binge it. It's up to the viewer. If you want to binge them all in one weekend, you can. If you want to space it out once a week, you could. It's up to the viewer. The viewer is in control. Such a selling point for Netflix. And at the time I'm like, yeah, like streaming was kind of new. And so I was like, yeah, this is great. You can binge it all in one weekend. Now that I'm on the other side of it, I'm like, no, I kind of like watching one a week. Like, the shows that I watch now are shows that are released one day a week, you know, and you kind of look forward to it on Fridays or whenever you watch your shows. I kind of like that better, because then it's not all over in one weekend. And then you have that anticipation and you have time to talk about it with your spouse or whatever and say, oh, what do you think's going to happen? Or, you know, what mystery are we trying to solve? You have that water cooler chatter throughout the week, waiting for the next episode to be released. So I'm a fan of that old method, the old network way of just releasing one a week. Mm. I can't remember what the question was. Wait, what was the original question?
Well, I think we're just talking about the pressure that you felt and the pressure that comes with the idea that there's no course correction. You're doing a whole season and it's out there and you've done what you've done. And within 3 days, everyone's either going to love it or they're not. And that's just kind of the feedback that sticks with you.
Yeah, I imagine. I don't think it was a lot of pressure on me, but for the writers and the producers who are making the decisions, I think that was probably a lot of pressure. It's like, okay, you got one chance to get this right. And if people don't like how the season ended, hope you get another season to course correct, like you said. People had big feelings. Like, people had big feelings about, you know, who is DJ going to choose? Is it Matt or Steve or, you know, whatever it is, people always had like big opinions about it. So, I imagine that was a lot of pressure. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm not the one making those decisions. So,
and
we didn't have any options either. It's like Netflix is like, this is our model. Go forth and shoot the episode or go forth and shoot the entire season in like 4 months. And we would go and do it and just cross our fingers, hope for the best.
Yeah. Well, turned out pretty good.
We got lucky. Yes, we did.
Okay, guys, quick time out here from this fantastic conversation. I'm having a lot of fun, but let's talk about something that is super important. A great organization, No Kid Hungry, is a campaign that is helping kids remain fed each and every day, even when school is not in session. So take a listen to this message and get to know No Kid Hungry.
Because of the coronavirus, schools have closed nationwide, and kids in need are missing nearly 34 million school meals every day. For many, it's the only healthy food they might get in a given day. No Kid Hungry has a plan to feed these kids, but they need your help. Donate now at nokidhungry.org to help feed America's children during this crisis and in the months to come. That's nokidhungry.org. Thanks.
Let's see here. Andrea Zuniga, did you keep any of the things from the set of Full, or I'll throw in Fuller House?
I did. I didn't keep anything from Full House. I mean, there's so much sweat. Like we had so many like wrap gifts, like gifts that were given at the end of the year by producers, or like there was always a cast gift. So I just have like a million jackets and backpacks, or like I have a fanny pack, which was, I'm sure that was cool in the 80s. Maybe it'll come back in style. So I have a lot of like swag from Full House, but I assume this person is talking about like props from the set.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kept, here, it's right behind me. Okay. So I kept this picture was on the mantle in the living room.
Oh, wow.
Right above the fireplace. So this is the last thing I swiped, like as I was packed up and leaving the set for the very last time, I grabbed this. Nice. I was like, okay, bye. See you later. So I have that. I have a bunch of like Kimmy Gibbler props. Like I have the cheesecake purse, the Rubik's Cube purse. And then I have like, I just happen to have like all of my scarves, like the bacon and egg scarf.
Oh, wow.
yeah, it's so ironic. I have like the cupcake scarf here. So I have a lot of like Kimmy Gibbler's iconic outfits, her jewelry. Like I have a lot of this. No, I don't have her jewelry right here. Sorry. Now I'm looking around. I'm like, what else do I have? So yeah, I kept a lot of Kimmy Gibbler accessories, jewelry, fun things, iconic outfits. I have the picture from the mantle. I have a cookie jar shaped like a San Francisco house from the kitchen. I did keep that. Okay. And then I have a very random small mini bust of Benjamin Franklin. That was on the desk in the kitchen set, which no, like you'll never see it. Like,
right.
Guarantee if you look, you'll probably never see it, but it was there. And it was such an inside joke with the cast. Cause first we're like, why is there a bust of Ben Franklin on this desk? And then it became a joke because one of our executive producers grew his hair out, like this long white hair. And we're like, yeah. Oh my God, he looks like Ben Franklin. He looked like Ben Franklin. So, and he would admit that too. Like, that's not, it wasn't a thing. He was just like, yeah, I look like Ben Franklin now. So we made this joke that this was the tribute to Bob Boyette because he looked like Ben Franklin. So I swiped that too because I was like, this is too much of an inside joke to not have it. So now it's displayed in my display case in my house. And I love it. It's so fun. Awesome. It makes me smile every time I see it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see here. Michaela Marks wants to know, what's your favorite all-time Full House saying? And it doesn't have to be from your character, just any of the catchphrases or anything that kind of became a repetitive popular thing from either iteration of the show.
Well, I say "Oh my Lanta" a lot for some reason. It just sort of rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
And that wasn't my catchphrase, but it just seems very appropriate to just be like, "Oh my Lanta," you know. For some reason I say it a lot. And then I love "How rude," because it's so great to reply it's so great using Fuller House or Full House, like GIFs and memes when you reply to people either on Facebook or like just text. You can text them now.
Yeah.
So like when somebody will say something to me and I want to joke back, I'll send like a little how rude GIF back where little Jody Sweeten is like, how rude. And I'm just like, this is great. Like what other person can use these GIFs to actually reply to people in real life? I get the biggest kick out of it, especially the GIFs that are of me and all of my like facial expressions, whether it's surprised or mad or what, like whatever. It's just, it's the highlight. It's such a highlight for me to get to use GIFs of myself to reply to people.
you talked about street cred before. Like you have the ultimate street cred to use Kimmy Gibbler stuff. I mean, who else?
It's ultimate. Great. It's one of my proudest accomplishments of my entire career. Like, forget awards. I have GIFs. Like, this is amazing. It's so fun. And there's a Kimmy Gibbler GIF for any type of scenario, whether it's congratulations or, oh, I'm sorry for your loss or what. Like, there is a GIF that is appropriate for any situation. I'm so proud of that.
That's excellent. Excellent. Velvet Rain wants to know, did you really like wearing the crazy outfits that Kimmy wore?
In Full House, no, I hated it. I was a teenager. I was very insecure and self-conscious and trying to like feel comfortable in my body that was growing. And I was very thin when I was young too. Not on purpose. I was just a gangly teenager. And so I felt very self-conscious about how I looked. So I hated it in the first in Full House. But then Fuller House, I talked a lot with Mary Kate, not Olson. Mary Kate is was our costume designer.
Okay.
She just happened to be named Mary Kate. And so we talked a lot about the style and we want to keep Kimmy Gibbler's like kind of quirky and zany, but still trendy, almost like a Sex in the City Carrie Bradshaw, where she was a little out there with her fashion. It was very fashion forward, but definitely kooky, but also on trend. Like she always looked great in anything that she wore. And so that was kind of our style muse was Carrie Bradshaw. Nice. And that's, you know, I don't know where Mary Kate shopped for all of her. I don't know where she found all it. Like, I know she found a lot of the jewelry on Etsy and the scarves too. She got off of Etsy. But for the costumes, she would just like, she had this wonderfully creative mind and she would put together combinations of clothes that I never would have thought of. And she made it comfortable and fun and exciting. And then people would be like, oh my gosh, where'd you get the cat kimono? Like, I need that cat kimono. Which was great. Like, she loved it. Like, Mary Kate loved being able to tell people where to buy these outfits. I loved the Fuller House Kimmy Gibbler costumes a lot. Like, there were very few things that I didn't like. Actually, if I didn't like them, I didn't wear them. Like when you're, you know, as an adult, I'm like, I have a voice. I'm going to use it. If I don't like something and I'm not comfortable, they're not going to make me wear it. You know, so I just, you know, anything I didn't feel comfortable in, I just spoke up and said that. And they're like, okay, let's find something else. Nice. So it was great. It was always great in Fuller House.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good to be one of the main stars of the show.
always.
Let's see. MJ Gray. Your favorite, this is interesting. Your favorite Full House episode.
Oh, I think we talked about this on the last time we talked. My favorite Full House episode is Birthday Blues.
Right.
Where DJ forgets Kimmy's 16th birthday.
Yes.
Because it's her anniversary with Steve or something like that. Mm-hmm. So she forgets Kimmy's birthday and they throw together this very haphazard last minute party with a hash brown cake and toilet paper streamers. And I love that episode because it's like a Kimmy-centric episode and it shows just what a kind person, she was zany, but she was such a kind person. Like she loved the hash brown cake and she loved the half filled bottle of perfume that Becky gave her. Like she was just so appreciative that people were honoring her, even though it was this half-assed party. She loved it. And then she found out that DJ actually forgot her birthday and she was so crushed and so sad. And I got to do like these emotional scenes in the backyard with Candace. And it was so great to be able to like show some range and show that Kimmy Gibbler was actually this, like a human, like a person. She wasn't just this sidekick that just was there for the laughs. Like she's actually a real character and a real person with feelings.
Yeah.
So I loved, I that will always forever be my favorite Full House episode.
I remember talking about how that was at that point, like your biggest episode, your biggest role in an episode to date. Yeah. I'm going to throw a cheap plug in. If anybody wants to go back, the very first time that we had Andrea on the show, the whole episode was really breaking down that show, was really talking more in depth about a lot of that. So yeah, that was a lot of fun talking about that. Just the first of what would be many, many Kimmy Gibbler highlights. So
No, that was good. You're right. I remember we got more in depth the last time we talked on the podcast. So yeah, everybody check it out. It was a good one.
Melissa Duncan, I'd like to ask what her next project is. So, you know, we haven't really heard from you since the end of Fuller House. What's been going on in your world and what are you looking towards now? Are you retreated back away from acting now, or is there more projects on the horizon?
That's a great question. I'm still figuring that out, but, cause the last year has been such a roller coaster and the industry was fully shut down for a long time. And then they had to figure out, can we still make TV safely? And they figured it out. Like they figured out how to make TV and it's very, very COVID safe. I've really stepped back. Like if you notice, I'm not really on social media anymore. I've kind of retreated a little bit into this private life, which I enjoy. Like I love my private life. Like it's just, I've always been more of a private person. And I just like shutting off my devices and just like staying away from the noise of social media. At the same time, I do have a couple of things in the works. I'm kind of like finding things as they come along and seeing what kind of fits into my life. There's a few things I've turned down because it involves too much travel or too much time away from my kids. And I'm just I'm not ready to travel or be away from my kids. Not yet. Not at this time in my life. But I am sporadically on a new show called That Girl Lele. It's a new Nickelodeon show that hasn't premiered yet, but it will premiere in July, I'm told. And so they just started up. They've only filmed, I want to say, 3 or 4 episodes. I've done 2 of them so far, and I play the principal of the school. I play Principal Willingham, who is kind of like if Kimmy Gibbler was a principal. that is who Principal Willingham is. She's a little kooky and a little bit like of an airhead. Like tries to be authoritative, but really doesn't like. Really doesn't know what's going on at the school, and like kids are like breaking rules behind her, and she has no idea. All right. So it's a super fun character to play, and it's a sitcom, which is just great. Like if I could just work on sitcoms for the rest of my life, I would be so happy because it's funny, it's comedy, it's so in my wheelhouse, and it's a family-friendly schedule. No travel. It's, you know, it's just shot here in LA, and you know, I can be home with my kids for dinner most nights. And so you just can't beat a sitcom schedule. It's so manageable. So so that's in the pipeline. I think I'm doing another. They're kind of figuring it out as they write the season. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm doing another episode of That Girl Lele in a couple weeks. And then we'll see. Like they're shooting 13 episodes, and then they're trying to sell the back half. You know, the next 13. I have to remember. I don't know how all this works. Like I worked for Netflix for so long. That I'm not quite sure how. I'm like, how does it work, you know, when you're on like a network like Nickelodeon? So we'll see where it goes and what happens and how many more I get to do. But so far that's been super fun. And then just little projects like last week I was in San Diego shooting a little web series for people.com called Celebrity Pet Matchmaker. And I was a host of the show and I was like setting up rescue dogs with families. And it was so great. Like I got to play with rescue dogs all day and find homes for them. And so I'm like, this is fantastic. So I'm getting to do some really cool projects right now. And it's here or there, you know, it's kind of feast or famine. Like I'm either really busy for a month or I'm like totally bored and I have nothing to do. Yeah. So hopefully that'll even out a little bit as, you know, as we come out of the pandemic and as Hollywood is reviving itself again. You know, I'm just kind of getting my feelers out there and seeing what it's like again. But my first week back, oh my God, okay, I'm going off on a tangent now, but my first week acting again, the first time in 18 months, I was a wreck. Like I was so rusty and I forgot all my lines and I'm like, I forgot how to act. So I called Candace Cameron Bure like every night, and I was like, oh my God, I'm like, I had the worst day and I can't act anymore and I'm not funny. And she was like, take a deep breath. You're fine. Like, you're doing fine. You're just rusty. You just need to practice a little bit. So yeah, the first week back was horrible, but it's getting better. It's getting easier. It's like a muscle. You got to just exercise it a little bit and it all comes back.
You sound like you're back in your zone, which is where we want you to be. So yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah.
there's more Andrea for us to see in the future. So that, I think that was really what Melissa really wanted to hear is, yes, there are more things coming. And
there's more things coming. There's awesome. More things coming. And if you have kids or you like kids shows, That Girl Lele is going to be a great, it's super funny. And it's very Nickelodeon, like with like exploding things and getting messy and like stunts. And it's really fun and very nice. Cute.
Awesome.
Yeah.
This is actually a question, a variation of this question we got several times, which I thought was really interesting, but Katie Healy was the first one. She wants to know, what's your favorite dessert?
That's such a hard, I have to narrow it down to one. Okay.
Apparently, we're not a buffet here.
I know, that's kind of seasonal too. I would say my all-time favorite dessert, and I never get to eat this, is the hot fudge cake at Bob's Big Boy. Like, are there even Bob's Big Boys? I know there's the original one in Burbank, and that's like probably the last time I had a hot fudge cake. It was the last time I was in Burbank.
I don't know.
Yeah, there used to be a chain of Bob's Big Boys, like wherever I grew up, and like they always used to be a bunch of them anywhere. And now, like, I can't find them anywhere. But the hot fudge
used to be a big rest stop thing for at least in North.
Yeah, and
the
you
Northeast.
Would pose with the big boy wearing like the checkered red and white overalls, and he has the hair, and you
high
always
fashion.
Pose for a picture with the big boy outside the restaurant.
Sure.
So yeah, I would love like the big boy hamburger and then the hot fudge cake. That was like the ideal treat for me. But I don't get to eat them that often anymore. So other than that, I don't know. I just recently discovered crumble cookies, which are so decadent and so amazing. I don't know if you have them where you live, but they just opened a crumble near where I am. And it's like they have rotating flavor. They have new flavors every week, and they're huge cookies. And it's probably a bad thing that they just opened a store right near me. But yeah, those are great. Those are great cookies too. So anyway. Yeah.
On the board. Miguel Vando wants to know, Andrea, are you guys coming up with the sixth season of Fuller House? This is going to be a variation of something I'm sure you hear every day.
Yeah.
Please, please, please. I've been watching you guys since Full House. I'm one of your guys' biggest fans from Colorado Springs. So, you know, I know there's always the never say never answer that you can give. Has there been at any point any discussion about anything more than never say never?
There's been zero discussion officially. Okay. And that is because of contracts and stuff between Netflix and Warner Brothers. Technically, Netflix owns the show. Like, they own Fuller House and they own the characters that were created during Fuller House. So, like, all the kids and Fernando and Jimmy Gibbler, like, they own all of those characters. Right. So our hands are kind of tied. Unless Netflix wants to do a sixth season or a third iteration of the show, our hands are kind of tied, at least for a predetermined amount of time, which it kind of depends on which character you're talking about and which time frame. It can be anywhere from a couple years to maybe a decade. I don't know. So there's not much we can do. I think if it was up to Warner Brothers, they would snap that up in a second, and we would have a sixth season, and we would have a Fullest House in the pipeline for years from now. But it's not up to us. It's not up to Warner Brothers. It's up to Netflix. So until those contracts are expired or renegotiated, there's been no talk of any more Full House or Fuller House or Fullest House or movies or what, you know, there's nothing in the pipeline. Nothing official has been discussed, but never say never, because the cast would do it in a heartbeat. I can guarantee all of us, 100%, no hesitation. We would jump on board in a second because we love the show. We love each other. We love these characters, and we just want to do it forever. it's not up to us. It's always about the red tape and the bureaucracy. And, you know, that's always what it boils down to. So never say never. Things can change and contracts will expire someday. And we'll see.
All right.
But in the immediate future, no. You just have to watch all the reruns and just keep, you know, rewatching all of the episodes on Netflix.
Yeah, there you go. Francis Blackwood, did it ever bother you? And we talked about this before. Did it bother you at the time during the Full House days that your character was kind of bullied by the Tanners? And, you know, you talked about how the guys treated you. And it's really interesting to think about because, like you said, I mean, back then it just seemed kind of like good-natured comedy in a way. But at this point, I think a lot of people would look at that as kind of tiptoeing over the line a little bit. Did it feel at all mean or too aggressive back then? And how do you feel about it now? I mean, there'd be some backlash if there was a new show with that sort of stuff going on. But I mean, how do you feel about it?
At the time in the 80s and 90s, it never bothered me. It never occurred to me that it might be bothersome. I mean, it was TV. It was fiction. We were pretending, like we were just playing parts. And I could easily separate that as a kid. And the guys were obviously so nice to me in real life. We were like a family. And so there was no rollover of like, there was no like, oh, they really don't like me. And they never treated me like that off stage, obviously. So it was just like playing a character and you play a bit and it never bothered me at the time. But in hindsight, now that I'm a parent and I have kids who want to have their kids over, now I'm just kind of like, yeah, you know what? That wouldn't fly like that. I think everything was exaggerated back then. And now we're just such more of a PC society. Mm. And there's so many jokes back in the 80s and 90s that would not fly today in this culture. You know, we've evolved as a culture and that's a great thing. Mm. But there's certain jokes you can't, that aren't appropriate anymore, that aren't even funny anymore.
Just the general spirit of it, I would say, even if you look at like Family Matters with Urkel. I mean, he was probably dumped on, I'd say probably at times, maybe 10 times as bad as Kimmy Gibbler.
Oh,
like
just, easily.
But
he was such an extreme character. It was almost like he was almost like a caricature of the character because it was so extreme. And yeah, that was kind of the thing. Like you dump on the sidekicks, you dump on the crazy neighbor or whatever. You know, that was just it was such a trope back in the 80s and 90s was to have the wacky neighbor. And I'm proud to be a part of that group. But it's different today. You know, if you have a best friend in a show or a wacky character, it's different. You can't be as mean to them anymore. It's almost you have to laugh with them. Yes. Instead of at them, if that makes sense. So it doesn't bother me. It's not a serious thing. I think the first time I mentioned this in an interview, like whatever media outlet that was, they kind of went with it and they were just like, oh, Andrea Barber's very upset. And I'm like, no, I'm not upset. I'm just noticing now. Like I'm just sort of like recognizing it. I'm like, okay, well, this is a thing. And I never noticed it as a kid. And now I notice it as an adult. That's it. I don't harbor resentment. I'm not angry about it. It's just something I noticed. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's not realistic, but it's a sitcom from the 80s and 90s. We're not supposed to take it that seriously. I mean, we have crazy stunts and we have cows in the kitchen. Like I mentioned last time, like there's stuff that's not meant to be believable in real life. And this is one of them. That's all.
Okay. Yeah. Zarabella wants to know, what was the hardest part about reprising your role as Kimmy Gibbler? That's a good question because like you mentioned your 20-year break and now you're going back and you're trying to figure out how to be this character that you were before, but 20 years later, and it is 20 years later, it feels very meta. Like I guess, how did you approach that? Did you kind of look at it as almost a totally new thing, or were you concerned about trying to be who Kimmy Gibbler would be 20 years later?
I should be embarrassed to admit this, but I did no prep. Like, I did nothing. And our producers, or I think it was Jeff Franklin, I don't know, he came to us before Fuller House, you know, before we started production on that, and he was like, dude, are you guys cool with it? Like, do you want acting coaches or like, he's like, I don't know, like, how do you feel about this? And we're just right. like, No, I think because we did these characters as kids, it's almost like muscle memory. Like I did this for 8 years from age 10 to 18. So this is like muscle memory at this point. Like I can't, it's hard for me not to be Kimmy Gibbler, if that makes sense. When I'm acting and I turn it on, it's just like, bleh, like she just sort of comes out of me. I have to restrain myself when I'm not Kimmy Gibbler, if that makes sense. So yeah, I did no prep. I just sort of showed up. The hardest part is remembering your lines, because again, it's like a muscle. If you haven't had to memorize lines for a while, you forget them very easily. But after you practice and you do a couple episodes, your brain, you know, your brain gets more absorbent. And I'm like, okay, I can do this now. I can memorize lines. If they give me new lines, you know, on the spot, I can memorize them pretty easily. I just have to warm up first, or kind of just, you know, keep my brain fresh and exercised. So that was the hardest part, was just learning lines and not forgetting them. The character stuff, it's just, that's natural. It just comes out. I don't know how it happens. It just comes out.
It's a part of you now.
It is. Kimmy Gibbler is forever a part of me.
Evan Duthit would like to know, what is your favorite music in Full House and Fuller House? Now, I got to tell you, because I mentioned this to you off air, my kids have gotten into Full House very recently, like within the last month or so, and they've been binging. And I've never seen the show so much back to back before. And it's been a very long time since I've watched it that much. I didn't realize how musical the original Full House is. There was always some sort of an excuse for these people to be singing in the house all the time.
Well, aside from the Beach Boys, I mean, I'm sure you're right. I remember, like, Jody Sweetin had a lot of, like, dance numbers that she had to do, which is great because she's a natural, like, she's a dancer. Like, she's a trained dancer, and she's so good at it that, like, yeah, take advantage of that. She's fantastic. And the singing, that I'm sure, just having John Stamos, who's he's a singer, a musician, very talented. Mm-hmm. And he's friends with the Beach Boys, so it's like, yeah, let's have the Beach Boys on. There was a lot of music.
Even if it was just the guys just singing to the kids or whatever, like there was very often just impromptu musical numbers happening on this show. And I didn't remember that because, again, you don't remember these trends when you're watching 1 week at a time, but when you're watching five episodes at once, it feels like a musical.
Yeah. And we repeated that in Fuller House too. There was a lot of musical numbers.
Oh, yeah.
We just had choreographers on the set all the time, and which is fun. It's so exciting. It's fun. And the end result is fantastic. And I love dancing. So, I mean, it's always fun to learn these dances in kind of a low pressure situation where you're with a group and it's fun. But it's a lot of extra work too. Like it's just a lot of work for the actors to learn the routines, for the director to get, like, you need extra cameras, usually like a jib, to film like these huge dance numbers. It takes a lot of extra rehearsal time and usually like an extra tape day sometimes. So the end result is fantastic and it's always fun doing these dance numbers, but it is a ton of work that I don't think people realize.
Does one stand out to you that you were involved in that's a favorite?
You know, one of the last ones we did was, it must've been season 5, where we went back to Club Euphoria. And the Dancing with the Stars guys, Max and Val, came back. They were in season 1. They came back for season 5. And we did a whole group, like Footloose. We did a whole group dance to Footloose. And it was like a guys and girls thing. And then, it was super creative and super fun. And yeah, for some reason, that stands out in my mind. I don't know why, but it was an easier dance to get down. And I just remember it being like, well, this is one of the last dance numbers that we're going to do. So let's just go for it. Let's just make it super fun.
It
was cute. So yeah, for some reason that one stands out more than others. I mean, obviously the proposal episode where we did like a whole mob flash dance on the back lot of Warner Brothers on the hottest day of the year. Oh my gosh, that took forever. The longest day ever, and just so many moving parts and people, and it was very difficult to shoot that. Not for me, because I was in a wheelchair for the whole scene, so for me it was pretty easy. Nice. But I just remember that, like, it did end up being fantastic. People will be like, this is one of my favorite episodes ever, was that proposal flash mob. But yeah, for some reason, the Footloose one stands out to me as being just really fun, just a fun week on one of our last episodes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's see. Julianne and Eric would like to know, what did you think of the reveal of the Gibbler house in Fuller House? Because it's something that we never got to see in all 8 years of the original Full House. We finally got to see where the Gibblers lived and sort of what that would look like. What did you think of what they came up with?
I was very eager to see this set. I was like, I can only imagine. And you know, I don't know if people know that we shot the Gibbler house is really the Tanner living room flipped. Oh. So they just took the Tanner living room and they redressed it as the Gibbler house. And then in post, they flipped the image. So the staircase is on the other side and the front door is on the other side. Oh. So if you look at it, you're like, that set looks vaguely familiar, but not. Well, it's because it's the Tanner living room dressed as the Gibbler house. So yeah, I thought it was very extra. Like, it was so extreme. It was so loud. Like, it just looked like a bad nightmare. Like some clown house or something. And I'm just like, I can't believe people would actually live here. But what I did love about that set was the little Easter eggs that were hidden throughout the set. Like, there was a unicycle, which is a nod to the telethon episode of Full House where Kimmy Gibbler rides a unicycle in the telethon. Mm. There was a framed picture of an ostrich, which is a nod to a Full House episode where Kimmy Gibbler pops up over the fence with her pet ostrich and tortures Uncle Jesse. And oh, what else was there? I can't remember now, but there's a few Easter eggs that if you're a diehard Full House fan, you'll find them and you'll recognize them. And we had so much fun kind of like talking to our set dressing people and being like, oh, let's put these things in here. What about this? What about this? It was fun kind of coming up with all of those little Easter eggs. So that's awesome. I loved that about the Gibbler house.
That was such a hallmark of the whole Fuller House experience too, was just all those throwbacks and the Easter eggs, like you said. So good.
So good. I love episodes like that with those little Easter eggs where we don't totally point them out all the time, but if you're a diehard fan, you'll notice and you'll see them.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this is an interesting one. Daniel Allen wants to know, when are you guys coming up to Brazil? And the reason I think that's interesting is because there's such a strong love for this show all over the world. It feels like, you know, at some point, were the stars to align, the whole world is ripe for some kind of a tour, some kind of traveling, some kind of opportunity to get up close and personal with fans all over. I mean, you guys could fill stadiums, I think. has there ever been any talk of physically getting together and doing something like that all over the world?
Not at this point, no. But back when we were promoting Fuller House, there was talk almost every season about, well, where can we send the girls? Where can we send them? To promote the show. And I know France was talked about. I don't know if South America was mentioned. I know that Juan Pablo de Pache, who plays Fernando, and Sony Bringas, who plays Ramona, Kimmy's daughter, they went to, I don't know if it was Brazil.
Oh.
Might have been Argentina. It was somewhere in South America. Right. And because they speak the language, they did all their press in Spanish, and it was fantastic. That they got to do this whole press tour, the two of them. So they've been there. And then we did press in Japan, and we did an episode in Japan because we have a huge, huge fan base in Japan too. So yeah, I guess the only place we really got to go was Japan and New York. But there was talk about sending us to different countries, but our schedules never lined up because they always want to do these press tours when we're not filming, obviously. Right. And then by then, you know, Candace is probably in Canada doing her Hallmark shows and Jody is doing, I don't know, political activism or whatever her thing of the week is. So we could never make it happen, our visits or our press tours to these other countries. So I think that window has passed. I would love to go to Brazil. I've never been anywhere in South America, so I would love to go someday, even just as a tourist. To visit or to meet fans, either way. We have the best fans. and from Brazil too. Like I'll go through my DMs and in Instagram or read comments, and it's always like the Brazilian flag emoji is like, you know, they love, they're so passionate about Brazil and Full House and Fuller House, and our fans from Brazil are just fantastic. They're top notch. They're so dedicated, and we love them so much.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So we're down to the final question, which is really more of a comment. So okay. I'm just gonna I can't believe we got through all these so fast, but so this is pretty cool. Jessica Reed, she says, I think you need to thank Andrea for being the girl who was always her. She was never afraid to go for it and just let her know that she made a huge impact on all the different or unique girls. She made it possible for other weirdo girls to be their complete, different, unique weirdo selves. And that means a lot. So aww. I'm sure that echoes a lot of what you've heard over the years or should hear, because that's the flip side of being a character like Kimmy Gibbler, beyond the scarves and the house and the being bullied by the Tanners, etc.
Yeah. But
she was still undeniably herself. And I think that you put the life into a character that I think helped a lot of people do the same thing. So that's pretty cool.
It's awesome. And that comment really means so much to me. And I do hear that a lot now. I never heard it back in the 80s and 90s, but I do hear it a lot now from people who are past that awkward stage. Or maybe they're still in the awkward stage, but they're past the adolescent awkward stage. And they say, you know, Kimmy was... She was such a great role model because she was so confident, and that's rare in teenage girls to have that level of confidence and be that different from her peers. And that is so rare. Like you don't see that very often in kids. So I never appreciated it at the time, but now as a grown up, I do. I think, wow, Kimmy Gibbler is such a great role model for young girls everywhere, for adults that are struggling and don't feel like they fit in. And who among us doesn't feel different or weird? Or, you know, I think that's such a universal feeling. Even the kids who were popular in high school, you know, that changes over time.
Yeah.
So it's just, there's a lot of lessons to be learned there about self-love and owning it, like owning yourself and loving yourself and not caring about what other people think or criticism or anything like that. Just, that's just noise in the background. But what really matters is how you feel about yourself and how you treat other people. And those are two things I really admire about Kimmy Gibbler, is her confidence and that she just loves everybody around her. Two great life lessons right there.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Two of many that people have learned for decades watching Full House, watching Fuller House, and more importantly, watching you and hearing you on the show again. So, yeah, thank you so much, Andrea, for coming back on the show again. And I mean, people are just, there was so much excitement about announcing this episode and the opportunity to interact and for you to answer their questions. So, you've made a lot of people very, very happy today, myself included.
Oh, I'm so glad. So. Well, I'm just thrilled. I'm thrilled that you asked me back. I'm thrilled that people have questions. Like, it's crazy to me that this far removed, you know, it's been a year since the final season dropped on Netflix, and people still have these burning questions. So
get that's used very to it. Flattering. It's not going away.
I know from Full House. I know that. Like, this is a show that will last. Like, this has staying power. Like, this show is going to last a lifetime. And that makes me so happy. And I'm so thrilled that people still have questions and are still loving the show. That makes me very honored.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I know you said you've been not very active on social media. Do you want people to follow you on social media?
Always. There's so many great, it's a great treasure trove. Like I have so many great pictures on Instagram. I'm not active on Facebook at all. Okay. Twitter is sort of hit and miss. But you know what's a great, like, I really want fans to go to my YouTube channel. Mm. And I don't even know how to find it. Just search Andrea Barber, I guess, and it will come up, I hope. I don't know. But I have so many, like, video diaries or vlogs from the last two seasons of Fuller House. And it's a great behind the scenes look, even if you're just interested in sitcoms in general, or you just want a behind the scenes look at Fuller House, it's great to just, and I'll still watch them to this day. I'll be like, oh, remember that day that, you know, we had to get up at 5 a.m. and then we had, you know, the newborns were on the set and it was so stressful. It's just great memories for me. It's a great behind the scenes look for fans. There's just a treasure trove of good, funny stuff on there. Just laughing, playing pranks on Jodie Sweetin. Like there's great stuff on there. So, you follow me on Instagram. I'm Andrea Barber everywhere. So please follow me everywhere. And I'm sorry that I'm not posting any new content right now. I hope that changes in the future. But right now I've just been enjoying just a more quiet life right now.
Gotcha. Yeah. Of course, you do have projects coming up. We're going to see you popping up here and there and everywhere. And we look forward to it. So thank you so much again for being on the show, Andrea. It's been great.
Oh, thanks so much for inviting me. And I look forward, maybe next year we'll do this again.
Sure. Absolutely.
We'll have our annual sit down with Kimmy Gibbler in a Q&A. I love it.
Let's do it. I'll post about it right now. I'm getting right off. I'm going to go on Twitter.
Same
All right.
Date.
And thanks for everybody for checking us out once again here on the Laugh Track. And make sure you subscribe, share, rate, review, give us a good one, hopefully. And we'll see you guys next time. Thanks.
Guys, thank you again and again and again for joining us on the Laugh Track. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate you following us and sharing and spreading the word. And we want to keep the ball rolling. The Laugh Track, of course, produced by me, Jerry Strauss, with additional Major League production by our maestro, Steve Prentice, our friend who does all the heavy lifting here on this show. And of course, if you want to hear more of our show, make sure you check out our website. LaughTrackPod.com is your one-stop shop for episodes old and new, as well as our free mailing list and links to all of our social media and many of the outlets where you can hear the show. We're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we are on Google, we're everywhere, man, and you can be too. So make sure you subscribe wherever you'd like so you can get the latest episodes as soon as they are released each and every week. Of course, social media, we're all over it, man. Instagram, we have an account that you can and should follow at Laugh Track Pod. Twitter, follow us there at Laugh Track TV. And of course, our Facebook group is growing and popping off, if you will. Is that what the kids say? You can check us out there and please join us at facebook.com/groups/Laugh Track Pod. Until next week, I'm Jerry Strauss. For Steve Prentice, this is the Laugh Track.